Hola. Ay, Dios mío, it's Thursday. Time for Jackie Vida Loca, where every week we divulge our Latino secrets, talk about our crazy Latino culture, gossip about our crazy Latino friends and relatives, and interview the craziest, the funniest Latino comedians on the Latino comedy scene. Welcome to my crazy life. Jackie Vida Loca.
Hello, this is Jackie La Loca, joining you again from beautiful sunny Los Angeles here for Jackie's Vida Loca. What a great opportunity, you know, to have this show and connect with you every single week. I want to start off first and foremost by thanking our loyal listeners. You know, I hear from you during the week, and I'm so excited when you tell me that you're going to support and you're going to continue tuning in. And so to those people in particular, I send you a big, fat, juicy kiss on your forehead, okay, because I'm married, okay, so no funny business. But anyway, listen, we're here to talk about some great stuff during this show. First, I want to tell you about my amazing week. One thing that happened this week, which was so cool, is that we met with a writer. When I say we, I'm talking about my partner, Nora Garcia, and me. We met with a writer that works, that has an office at CBS, and we talked to him about our sitcom, Alyssa's Blog. I'm going to tell you all about that later. It is such an exciting process, a grueling process, no less, but exciting, because we're actually finally starting to see that our dreams can come true. And people, for anybody sitting out there who just thinks that all you need to do is sit around for somebody to come knock on your door and prize you with all your dreams, it ain't ever going to happen. You have to get your little tushies off the couch and do something, and that's what I feel we did this week. We had a great meeting. We got some great direction. We learned even more because we're both newbies at this stuff, but we have a great idea, and we're going for it. The other thing I'm going to do today is interview my little cousins, Jana and Janice Garcia. They live in Puerto Rico. They are my Twitterers. They're my little Loquita number one and Loquita number two because they've literally become the presidents of my fan club. They're just amazing, and I'm so excited to introduce you to them today. But, you know, it is a fun thing to actually come up with a sitcom idea, right? And think about what it would be like to bring people together every week to watch your show. And one of the reasons why I came up with the idea to begin with was because today, you know, as an actor, you can't just wait for things to happen to you. You can't just wait for the traditional route. You have to, like I've said before, you have to build the machine. And one of the machines that I'm building is a sitcom. And I want to tell you how to do this yourself, because it's been a total learning process for me and for Nora. And luckily, I have, I'm married to somebody who is in the business and really has been doing this for a long time and can give me a lot of advice. But even still, there's still legwork you have to do on your own. So to take a little bit of the pain in the butt legwork out of it for anybody sitting out there that wants to start their own sitcom, here's the first thing I want to tell you. Know what a sitcom is, okay? In the TV world, I know we all watch television, but I don't think we realize that there's all these different genres. So there's reality TV, which is unscripted, and then what we call scripted television, which is TV movies, miniseries, drama series, and sitcoms. And a sitcom is short for situation comedy. The format is usually 30 minutes long, okay? And every sitcom has something in common, and that is that the idea of the show centers around a central group of people, characters that are living together, whether it's in a home, an office, a bar environment, any environment, just dealing with life in a unique situation. Now, some of you out there might actually be in treatment. If you want to pitch a sitcom, you need to write a treatment. So I'm going to tell you what a treatment is. A treatment is a document. I know it's a fancy name, and you hear it out there, and you may not know what it means, but it's just literally a Microsoft Word document that includes the premise of the situation, describing how these characters that you've given birth to, that you created, how did they come together? What are the circumstances that hold them together? It's a description of what that world is and an outline of these characters inside and out. You need to think creatively about what makes them tick, what are their passions, what are their loves, what do they not like. You need to describe them very specifically and what their agendas might be. Some might have an evil agenda, some might be very benevolent, but this is how you create characters and their view of the world, their unique and peculiar habits. Like if one of your characters was like Philip in my fourth grade class that constantly picked his nose and put it under the desk, You need to write that into your character synopsis, okay? And don't be afraid to create cool, funny, interesting characters like that, because those are the ones that really stand out. Not that everybody's going to want to watch a nose picker. I certainly didn't enjoy it, but they exist, and it's reality. So you need to write the synopsis on your character, you need to write a treatment, and you need to write the premise of the situation that holds them together within this treatment, okay? And then as part of this treatment, you have to write a list of the sample episodes that go to describe the story arc for that particular season. And for those of you who don't know, in any sitcom, you pretty much have a season of 13 episodes, okay? That makes up one season. But if you're less known and you're not a huge name in the TV world, whether that's as an actor or writer or executive producer or whatever, you might only get an order for 6 episodes. Let me tell you something. If I got an order for 1 episode for the pilot, I'd be freaking ecstatic. But with people that are a little less tested, you're probably going to get an order for less than 13. But 13 is what usually makes up one season. Now, for shows like big shows like Modern Family, they may get an order for 22 episodes. They're proven. They have big names. They've won awards. So it's a surefire bet that people out there are going to watch that show. Some shows get on television, and after 3 or 4 episodes, they get the axe. A really great friend of mine, Echo Kellum, he's just an amazing, the coolest guy I know. He's a great comedic actor. Got a role on Ben and Kate. Great show. Unfortunately, it didn't make it past 4 episodes, I believe. So his show got canceled, even if they may have purchased more than 4 episodes. But still, he has a great career ahead of him. And basically, the difference between what networks do and production and studios do, production companies, it's very separate. So networks, such as ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, they broadcast shows. That's their business. But all of those networks have separate network production companies, separate from the network. And studio production companies also exist. These two types of production companies exist to finance and produce these shows. So when you're pitching your sitcom, you could be pitching directly to the network, or you could be pitching to one of these production companies to produce it and help you sell it into the networks. And it's a little bit of an intricate process, but as far as I'm concerned, when you're out there trying to pitch something, you want to pitch it to everybody. All right? You want to pitch it to everybody because you want to get the show, your creative idea, launched. And you want to think about what these things are going to cost. Because as an example, big network shows like Desperate Housewives can cost up to $1.8 million per episode. That's $1.8 million per episode to produce. And that includes actors' salaries. Like for Desperate Housewives, all of the top 4 ladies made $400,000 an episode, people. You know what I could do with $400,000 aside from like rescue every dog and cat I know? Oh my gosh, there's some plenty shopping to be done. But by comparison, Charlie Sheen earned even more. For 2 and a Half Men, he made $1.5 million per episode. It's amazing that somebody would turn out so screwed up after all this money that he's making. You think he'd get some treatment, right? But for newcomers like John Galecki of The Big Bang Theory, he makes about $100,000 per episode, which is not chump change. And this all gets paid for eventually by advertisers. Now, I've just given you some of the budgets for major network shows. For cable TV shows, the budgets are about 50 to 70% lower, so sometimes it makes sense to go with the cable network. All right, in our show we're going to have today Nora Garcia, a screenwriter and author, and my partner. We're going to talk about our sitcom, and we're going to, like I said, interview Jonna and Janice Garcia. So stick with me, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Listen to Easy Way Broadcasting shows powered by WTVNetworks.com every day of the week on Blog Talk Radio with celebrity hosts Eric Zulli, Shane Sparks, Sarah Winchester, Rick Rosman, and Mo Egger. Easy Way Broadcasting is the hottest place for music, sports, celebrity gossip, advice, and insider tips. Follow at Easy Way Broadcast. Call Easy Way Broadcasting shows with your questions and comments at 914-338-1303. Join the 500,000 Twitter followers who have discovered Eric Zulli's newest project, Easy Way Broadcasting, powered by WTVNetworks.com on Blog Talk Radio. Find the most up-to-date info on his show, Easy Talk, which airs every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time by following his Twitter site at Easy Way Broadcast and at Eric Zulli. EZ connects listeners with their favorite celebrities and Hollywood insiders who are doing it the easy way. And you can too. Talk to Eric during the show at 914-338-1303.
So you're listening to Jackie Vida Loca, and next I'm going to introduce to you my beautiful friend, Nora Garcia. Originally from New York City, Nora is a gorgeous, sexy, smart Puerto Rican-Cuban writer that has made Barcelona, Paris, Houston, and Miami her home, but now she lives here near me in sunny Los Angeles, where she's enjoying a super successful career in the entertainment industry. Having spent a number of years in sales and marketing, a huge turning point in her personal life and career came 3 years ago when she divorced her husband and decided to take what she called her writing habit and turn this passion into more than just this little side thing. She became one of only 8 writers accepted into the UCLA screenwriting program in 2010 and has since not only completed the course, but she's also done 2 screenplays. Make no mistake, Nora is an accomplished, published author. She recently re-released her first novel, The Lightbearers, about, get this, an ancient Egyptian king and queen who have been reincarnating together for the past 3,300 years. I met Nora almost 10 years ago, and we became instant friends, and now we formed a company called Like Entertainment, you know, like thumbs up, like, where in partnership we're developing a number of comedy, television, and live event projects. Welcome to Jackie's Vida Loca, my loca evil twin, with whom I've been reincarnating for the past 8,000 years, Nora Garcia. Hey, girlfriend.
Hey, Jackie. How are you? Boy, what an introduction. That was fabulous. I loved it.
I gave it the old 1-2, baby.
You sure did.
That's really you. That's all that stuff I just said was really you.
Wow.
It's amazing to have you on the show. You know, this is show number 5 now. I can't believe how quickly 5 weeks have now gone by, and every week we get more listeners. Thank you so much. You are very special to me for many, many reasons. We've known each other, like I said, now for 10 years, and now we're working together seriously on pursuing our mutual passions, and I love that.
So do I. This has been such an amazing experience, and working with you has just been such a joy, and I can't even begin to tell you how much fun I'm having with this.
Well, I am too. I think there's a certain spark that we have between us, and I find that when you do something or I do something on our own, it just becomes better when we come together, when we collaborate on stuff, you know?
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Well, and I think it helps, too, when you're working with somebody who you respect and who you admire and who has, you know, a similar sense of humor. You know, you just kind of bounce all of these amazing ideas and they just keep, you know, spiraling upward. And I think it just makes for a great collaboration.
I totally agree. And, you know, like any partnership, we've had a little bit of peaks and valleys, but I think the beauty of it is that we're able to sort of get through those times and come out the other side and still be stronger and still be friends and still be working together on our dreams. And that's what excites me the most, to really have a partner in crime. Literally.
I couldn't agree with you more.
You know, when we first met, and I remember that lunch a long time ago when we met, we had lunch in Costa Mesa, and I remember there was never a lack of conversation. A lot of what we talked about was like past lives. Do you remember that call? I mean, that talk?
I do, very much so.
And it's great that you've written this book, The Lightbearers, about this topic, reincarnation. We love to talk about this stuff, but I want to know, like, what originally inspired you to write that book?
Well, you know, I've always believed in reincarnation. I feel like I have a very old soul, and I really believe that I've been around for a long time. And I have always known about Egypt, and I really think that that's where I started from. And so the story came to me. It was like somebody was piping something into my head. The end came, and then which was a seed of an idea, and then a couple of weeks later, the middle, and then the beginning. And then I was in the New York Public Library in the Egyptian section trying to find some books that would allow me to do my research and explore this further. And the wildest thing happened to me. A book literally fell off of a shelf right and landed right at my feet. There was nobody around. I was the only person in that section of the library. There was no wind. There was no air conditioner, nothing. Just fell off the shelf and landed at my feet. And I picked it up, and it was the story of Akhenaten and Nefertiti, and that's who I based my characters on. And they were such remarkable human beings. They were so elevated and so evolved and years ahead of their lifetime, and so I created a fantasy about them.
Wow, that is really an incredible story. And, you know, the cynics out there can say what they want, but these things really do happen, and I think they're always in front of us, but we just don't realize it. And, you know, you were talking about this story, the story being such a personal story for you because you felt very connected to that culture. I often feel that the actors, the directors, the producers get all the glory in this business, and the writers are truly the unsung heroes because those stories start with the writer. Yes, a director must tell the story, and you know, they are storytellers. I don't want to take that away from them, and of course actors are as well. And everybody else in the mix, but the writers, that's where the nugget of the idea begins. What do you think makes for a really well-told story?
Well, I think that a well-told story has to have the element of surprise, unpredictability, and I think you have to have characters that you love to love and love to hate. You know, you've got to be able to find a way to relate to the characters in the story. But I think that when you have a story with lots of unexpected twists and turns, it makes for the edge of your seat type reading where you can't turn the page fast enough because you want to know what's happening next. Those are probably the most critical elements, I think. And of course, you know, to be able to express yourself in a way that also makes the story flow and makes the reader feel comfortable about what you're writing about in terms of how it's written.
I agree. And, you know, I often feel, because, you know, you and I have been writing together now, I often feel like sometimes it's better to say less but be more compelling with what you say. And that's where I think, you know, really great writers are able to pare down the number of words and say more with less. So less is more, essentially. Don't you agree?
I absolutely agree because, you know, a lot of times, too, where you have writers who, you know, have a tendency to keep repeating themselves over and over and over again, you know, saying the same thing, but maybe, you know, in a slightly different way, after a while it becomes repetitious and it's like you just want to, you know, hurry up and get through that section because you already read that, you know. You want to keep the story going, and you want to keep the flow of the story going, and, you know, repetition can, I think, put the reader off, basically.
I totally agree, and honestly, when that happens, I can pick up a book that everybody's talking about or whatever, and all of a sudden I realize that the style of the author is just like that, like what you said, they're just very, and they drone on. I can't even get through it. I never pick it up again, and it sits on my night table for months until I overcome the guilt and just send it back to the library or just put it somewhere, you know, and never touch it again. So I completely agree with you. But there's something you mentioned before, and that is characters. Interesting characters. And you and I have been working on this sitcom, which I want to tell people about a little bit, right? Because we're not ready to disclose the whole idea right now. Alyssa's blog, right? Alyssa's blog is a story. Why don't you give the synopsis? You share the synopsis of our sitcom.
Well, it's basically the story of a wacky Latino family that is viewed through the lens of their 16-year-old daughter. And there are so many great and fun characters. And we introduce a variety of characters that I think would appeal to our ever-emerging multi-ethnic American audience, because we have a little bit of everybody in here, and the wackier the better.
Absolutely. And the thing is, you know, it's about a Latino family, which I love. I love the fact that we've made them the centerpiece of our show. So it's Latino-inspired, but truly the comedy and the stories and each episode relates to everybody. It's comedy for everybody because outside of culture and those traditions that make us, that unify us as Latinos, outside of that, we run into the same things that everybody else does. We just happen to handle them a little differently. So our Casa de Locos is called Alyssa's Blog. And we'll disclose more to our listeners as time goes on. But what I wanted to talk more about and focus on today is, you know, what's this experience been like for you? Because I know for both of us, we're sort of delving into a world that's kind of new to us. So we've learned a lot. What's it been like for you so far?
Well, certainly it's a huge learning experience. And what I've really enjoyed about this experience is the collaboration. It's allowed me to be able to bounce off your ideas, you bounce off of my ideas, that back and forth that creates a spiral, which I think is a very positive spiral that gets us to the next level. You know, writing is a very lonely experience when you're doing it on your own, but when you're collaborating with somebody, aside from the fact that it can become a lot of fun, especially when you're working on a comedy,
right.
You know, you just go off on these wild and crazy tangents and you come up with all these wild and crazy ideas, and then the other person that you're working with helps to bring it into focus. You know, you may have an idea that I bring into focus, or I may have an idea that you bring into focus. That type of collaboration, I think, can be very successful, and it's certainly a whole lot more fun than sitting in a room by yourself, you know, working on a writing project day in and day out, because that can be a very lonely experience. You know, I'm a big believer in, you know, brain power and more than one brain, you know, working on a project. And I think that's true for just about anything you do. I think, you know, teamwork and collaboration in just about any endeavor in life, I think, makes it more interesting, and it certainly lends itself to a greater level of success.
By all means, one of the things I was thinking about as you were talking is when we're writing together and we're coming up with ideas and we're doing this whole brainstorming swirl and we're laughing, we're enjoying, but when we decide on an idea, I remember, like, we'll sit there and we'll say, okay, what would happen if the opposite of this happened? The thing that's not
right.
Predictable. And you know what? That other thing, when you, like, dig a little deeper, you go outside the box, it makes it even funnier. To find that nugget, to find the stuff that interesting surprises are made of. Because you talked about this before, it's that element of surprise. So I think as a writer and as a writing team, our best stuff comes when we take the opposite point of view. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that I've also gotten out of this experience is that it's forced me to be more open-minded. Because, you know, sometimes you go into a project and you have your set agenda or your set, you know, perspective or your set of ideas, and you think that's the only way to do it. And you can't go into it that way. You have to be open and be receptive to looking at it from different perspectives. And that's one of the things that I've gotten out of this, too, is that it's, I wouldn't say forced me, but I think it's, I've evolved into being more open and receptive to other points of view that I had not even considered before. You have so many great ideas, too, and you have a different perspective than I do. And so when I decide that I am going to be open to it and listen instead of immediately, you know, dismissing it, that's when you really start to make a lot of progress and you really start to break a lot of positive ground and taking the story to the next level.
I completely agree. I think that level of vulnerability and openness allows for a flow of concepts to go back and forth because, you know, we are feisty Latinas. It's actually part of the DNA. So it's very easy to say, no, but this is how, you know, I see it. But when you can be completely vulnerable and lay it all out and just be open to receiving, I do
right.
agree that it makes the work way, way better. You know, this whole process of writing a sitcom, because I think for our listeners who are out there who may or may not be in Los Angeles, because we have listeners all over the place, but for our listeners out there, the writing process for a sitcom goes well beyond writing your idea down on paper. We have written a synopsis for 3 seasons on television. We have written every single episode out. Not the script per se, but written a synopsis for every single episode over the course of 3 seasons, which is 13 episodes per season. We have literally done a draft of every single character, both principal characters and secondary characters and recurring characters. We have looked at Alyssa, who is our lead character. We have looked at her inside and out, Nora. You remember how we just literally went through everything? Like, can you talk a little bit about that process just of even identifying who Alyssa is?
Well, I think it was definitely a challenge because Alyssa is a teenager and we're not.
Hey, speak for yourself, girl.
We definitely had to do a little research and read different blogs from, you know, teenagers and, you know, and try to get a sense of, you know, what goes through the mind of a teenager today, and what are the things that they like, what kind of music, who is the flavor of the month, you know, what are they wearing, you know, what do they think is hip, what are they doing in their spare time. So you really have to take the time to understand what teenagers are like today compared to what we were like when we were teenagers, and things have changed.
Absolutely, but you know what? Somehow or other, we literally, I think, completely captured Alyssa.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we've been able to really understand what makes her tick, what upsets her, what her loves are, what her passions are. And this is really where creating comes in. We are literally giving birth to a person with
right.
love and passions and disappointments and issues in her life. And to that degree is how you have to go to that level to really create these characters. Because you talked about before, interesting characters. And believe me, we got some doozies.
You know, in the writing process, when you create these characters, they, after a while, begin to take on a life of their own, and they really feel like real people to you. When you talk about giving birth to a character, you really feel that they are real. You definitely look at them from a different perspective, and that, you know, this is a real human being. This isn't just some fake person that we made up. That's another thing, I think, that makes the writing process really, really interesting, too, is developing an affinity to these characters. You actually begin to feel close to them because you feel like you know them, like they're part of you and you're part of them.
And you know what else, Nora? It's like we did so much work. We've been working on this for 2 years, people. We did so much work on really identifying the ins and outs of each and every single character that when they develop that life of their own, it's because of all the work we put into it. And I think mm-hmm. that's really a very important differentiator. If you're going to
yeah.
write, to know those characters inside out, to write it all out, you remember we've spent hours and hours painstakingly going through
mm-hmm.
these characters. And I know at times we were just literally sweating at the brow saying, okay, how much more of this are we really going to do? Do we really need to do this? I know we've had those conversations. Can we just get on with it? But you know what? The reason why they take on a life form of their own is because they're so well-developed that they talk back to us.
Right.
I really believe that they influence us back from what we created. Does that make sense?
I have to tell you a funny story. One of the scripts that I wrote involved fraternal twins, and they were very, very, very close. And in the first iteration of that script, I killed off the brother, and fraternal twins, brother and sister, and the sister was so distraught, and I wrote this scene about her reaction to it, and as I'm writing the scene, I actually start crying because I'm feeling her pain. And I'm sitting there going, oh my God.
This is why you got to do comedy.
I mean, seriously, I'm crying as I'm writing the scene because I really feel like her brother really died.
You know what? It's true, though. I mean, if anything happened to Alyssa in one of our episodes, I think I'd be depressed for weeks.
I know. I would, too.
All right, listen, we'll talk more about our characters in Alyssa's blog at some other point in the future. But what I want to ask you, because, you know, one of the things that kind of stood out for me as I was talking about you up front when I introduced you, is that this turning point in your career and in your personal life was when you ditched the ex-husband. And that sort of allowed you to move on and pursue your passion of writing. I want to know, because I knew you before and now I know you after, right? So do you feel that that life experience pours itself into your writing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I kind of felt like it was very cathartic for me at the time, because the project that I was writing at the time was about a woman who just divorced her husband and had joined a matchmaking service. And and so I was able to, and of course she had two daughters that were, you know, going through different experiences. You know, one daughter had discovered that her husband was cheating on her, and the other one just, you know, couldn't find Mr. Right. So there was a little bit of me in all of the daughters, in both daughters and the mother. So I was able to take my experience and what I was feeling going through and kind of inject that into these characters. So, you know, the timing couldn't have been more perfect.
Did you kill the husband off? I just want to know, did you kill him off?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
That's the great part about writing. You could kill off whoever you don't like. You know, you don't like that ex-husband? Next chapter, he's done.
In the sequel, he gets killed off, but...
How does he get killed off? Like, if you had your perfect way to kill him off, would it be like through, would a train run him over?
No, he just croaked.
While having dinner at the dinner table. I think, like, if he chewed on a chicken bone would be a great way to finish him off. Okay, so listen, we've known each other for 8,000 years. I want to know what's going to happen in the next 8,000 years. What's next for you, Nora?
Getting Alyssa's blog produced is definitely high on the priority list. You know, getting my book out there is also up there. Writing a sequel to that, you know, developing more projects with you. Those are the priorities because this is something that I love, something that you know, I'm hoping to be able to leave my job in corporate America to eventually be able to do this on a full-time basis. That's the frustrating part, you know, in terms of having to do a 9-to-5 job that you got to pay the bills, you know.
You got to turn the lights on. But here's what I want to know, Nora. So if you find another husband, does this mean the writing career goes down the toilet again?
Oh, hell no. No, I'm never giving that up. You know, I put that on hold for a long time, and I regret having put it on hold for that amount of time, but I do believe that timing is everything, and you and I had not were not working on anything before. I wasn't in the same place that I'm in now as far as my book is concerned, and certainly there are so many avenues now for marketing a book or getting a sitcom produced. It's, you know, we don't just have to rely on the networks. There's a lot of things going on with emerging media, with the internet. There's so much more opportunity now. For me, with marketing, I've got social media applications that will help me. And then also, too, the people that I've met since I've been here in Los Angeles. I'm in a much different place today than I was 10 years ago in terms of the caliber of people that I'm meeting. And so all of those things combined, I think, have brought me to the place where I'm at now, and it's certainly not something I'm planning on giving up anytime soon. I can tell you that.
Amen. And I'm going to, you know, record this show just in case you change your mind. I will replay you the last 30 seconds of what you just said. But listen, before we end our interview, and I so appreciate you taking the time with me today to do this because it means the world to me, not just to have you as a friend, but to be working on some exciting stuff together. But before we end our interview, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they find your book, The Lightbearers, where they can buy it, because I want every single one of you out there, all my loquitos, please go out and look up Nora's book, The Lightbearers. Tell them where they can buy it.
Just go to Amazon.com and in the search box, put in The Lightbearers, and you have an option of a digital, a soft cover, or a hard cover.
And it's The Light Bearers, so it's one word,
LightHTBEARERS,
about an ancient Egyptian king and queen who have been doing it for 3,300. Can you imagine doing it with the same person for 3,300 years? Now, I'm surprised she hasn't killed him off. Does she kill him off one of those times?
Well, they do. They get killed off in the opening. They actually come back as two completely different people, so it's always a new adventure.
Well, does she kill him off with a piece of chicken?
No.
Okay, that'll be your second. Lightbearers, too. It's been great fun having you on our show, Jackie's Vida Loca. I look forward to having you on again and talking about our future successes. I really appreciate your friendship, and thank you, my love. I'll talk to you again soon.
Oh, thank you so much, and I so appreciate your friendship, and I'm so looking forward to a fabulous future with you. I love you.
We are the Mutual Admiration Society, right here, the Nora and Jackie team, Like Entertainment. We're in for very big things in the future. I'll talk to you soon, my love. See you later.
All right, bye-bye.
So I told you earlier that we are going to interview today Jana and Janice Garcia. They literally got me so hip to the need for nurturing my Twitter account for Jackie's Vida Loca. Of course, I invite you every week to follow us at Jackie's Vida Loca on Twitter. We have, you know, Facebook. We have emails that you could send to us. But at the end of the day, Twitter is critical to establish a following, right? And I want to nurture these relationships with my listeners through the week, right? So these two young ladies are the experts, and they have literally knocked some sense into my head about how to increase my Twitter followers. But I also did a little research of my own, and here are the five top things you need to either do or not do, the how-tos of increasing your Twitter following. Okay, so the first thing is shut down the sales pitch, people. Ugh, I can't stand it when people are always trying to sell you something. You know, if you are viewed as a snake oil salesman on Twitter, it's insta-death, okay? You're done. The second thing is be a resource for juicy information. So focus on giving, not taking, okay? Share the news, the tips, advice, answer questions. Bottom line, add value to the lives of other people, and you will increase your Twitter following. The third rule of engagement is be engaging. Be social. Engage with people if they tweet you, and it's not spam. Give a comment. Make an observation. Send a question. When you reply or have conversations with people, they are twice as likely to follow you. It's such an easy concept, isn't it? The other thing is to be active, okay? So don't just get a tweet or, you know, don't sit back and let other people do all the work. The more active you are with quality content, okay? Don't start putting, you know, pictures of bunny rabbits doing it, you know. I don't want to see that. Okay, I take it back. Maybe I want to see it. But, you know, put quality content, participate in quality conversations, and be actively engaging. The more likely you will show up in searches or be seen by other followers who have retweeted you or have had a conversation with you. But as you're going to learn in my upcoming interview with Janice and Jana, you don't need to favorite every single thing like I've been doing, and they literally put me in my place when it comes to that. Okay, the last thing on Twitter, and I would say this is pretty much life advice, is be real. Okay, the more real you are, the more transparent you are, the more people can identify with you and connect with you. So, you know, you want people to get to know the real you. But here's a little word of advice, okay? And pay attention. Don't put your home address on Twitter, locals. You're smarter than that. And don't just follow any fool. I was told that I shouldn't just follow people I don't know. Be careful. As my Latina mom has said to me all my life, which I've not always listened to, and she can attest, be careful on Twitter. Because you know what? There may be an axe murderer out there. And I'm not kidding. There's crazy people all over the internet, which is completely unregulated. So if you want to be smart, don't just put all kinds of, like, personal data. And now I'm going to get serious. Like, you know, you don't want to put all the information on your family or where they live or what they're doing now. All this stuff about I'm at this particular location at this particular time is just inviting people to do bad things. So, you know, who are already inclined to do bad things. So pay attention because Twitter, you know, is a critical place to build a community. And did you know the number one users of both Twitter and Facebook are Latinos. We are more social than any other ethnic segment out there. We have more people that we interact with every day online and through digital resources. That would be social media. That would be like Twitter and Facebook. We have more people that we interact with every day. So you little Latino locals out there that are on Twitter every day, all day, this is how you increase your Twitter followers. And by the way, I need you to help me increase my Twitter followers and follow me on Twitter. That's all I'm trying to say. I said all that for the last 5 minutes just to say, find me at Jackie's Vida Loca. Okay, this loca is going to send you off to a promo. But here's the thing. After we come back, you're going to listen to Jana and Janice tell me their pearls of wisdom, their magic, their special thoughts about Twitter.
I'm Aubrey O'Day and I'm doing it the easy way.
I'm attorney Gloria Allred and I'm doing Hollywood the easy way.
What up, y'all? It's your partner, Big Boy, Big Boy's Neighborhood, and guess what? I'm doing it the easy way, you're doing it the easy way, all of us are doing it the easy way.
Hi, I'm Larry Namer, co-founder of E! Entertainment Television, now president of Meitong Development Group, which works mainly in China. I really wanted to say a few words about Eric Zhu Li, or EZ, as a lot of people know him. I just want to say, Eric, keep up the dedication, the perseverance, and the creativity. You're helping to change the media world.
Okay, loquitos out there, I promised you that you're going to meet my beautiful, sweet, gorgeous, young, super smart little cousins, loquita number one and loquita number two. Let me introduce you to Janice and Jana Rodriguez. Where did Rodriguez come from? We're going to see us. We're not Rodriguez. I was just going to say Jana Rodriguez. I don't know what's going on here today. Okay, listen, you guys have got me completely nervous because I'm trying to figure out how to really broaden the following for the show on Twitter. And you guys literally took over last weekend and went absolutely nuts, totally unprovoked. I so appreciate all the effort you made. And I need you to sit down here with me today and walk me through this. But before we dive into the whole Twitter thing, I want to introduce everybody to you. So say hello to the audience that's out there.
Hey, my name is Jenny.
And I'm Jana, and you're watching Jackie Zita Loca Show.
Oh, my God, she's on her way. She's going to be like this mega announcer. This is the training ground. It all started here, people, okay? All right, so let me tell you a little bit about these ladies because they are amazing. They're doing a lot of things. So Janice is 19 years old. Both of them live in Puerto Rico. Janice is studying to be an enfermera, a nurse. Her favorite thing is to hurt people, although she will deny it. But she also likes to make people laugh. You know, I hope that while she's hurting people and putting needles and stuff in them, I hope she's telling them jokes. So that she can make them feel a little better. So we're going to talk to Janice in a minute because I want her to tell you about her passions and what she's totally into. And then Jana is 16 years old, so it's Janice's little sister. Don't you think their parents could have been a little bit more creative with their names, Jana and Janice? It would totally confuse the hell out of me if they lived in my house. Jana's 16 years old. She's in high school. She's in 11th grade. Hey, by the way, I want to know, who's the boss? Is it Jana or Janice?
I mean, it's Jana. Come on. I mean, no, it's me. Hello.
Okay, if you could decipher whose voice was who, then you'll know who the boss is. I have a feeling they both, like, get along really, really well, though, and that's why it's great to have them on the show. But Jana loves everything to do with movie production, entertainment. Those are her career passions, her career aspirations. But these ladies also have other passions, and we were just talking about this, and I want them to tell you a little bit about themselves. So we're going to start with Janice. She's going to tell you a little bit about what she loves to do.
Well, I love to help animals, and so I want to go to children's hospital to help the little kids with cancer. I want to do a lot of things. I want to make other people laugh. I love acting. I love everything.
Well, you have a lot of passions, and you know, I think we share a love of animals, and one of the things I want to do in an upcoming show, and I want to do it with both of you, is to figure out how we can be advocates for animals, animal rights, animal adoption. You know, I constantly am posting on my Facebook pictures of dogs and cats looking for homes, and it just breaks my heart. So if you will commit with me, Janice, and Jana, you too, because I know you love animals too, if you guys will commit with me right now that we're going to do something bigger and better than what we're talking about here now, I would really appreciate that.
Of course you do.
Yes,
yeah, we love it.
Okay, perfect. All right, so Jana, your turn. Tell us a little bit about your passions and what you want to do.
Okay, well, I'm studying right now in a school specialized in radio and television, so they teach me everything that has to do with the media, with movies, television, radio, how they work backstage, the cameras, everything has to do with that. So I like that a lot. And also, I would like to, like, as in a hobby, photography, I like to take pictures a lot, so that's interesting.
Very good, very good. And you said something about volunteering before we got on the show. You talked to me a little bit about volunteering. I want you to share that with our listeners.
Okay, well, I would like to volunteer for the Red Cross because I think it's an amazing organization. They help people, and they go to different places, and, I mean, everything you do is free, so that's very cool. And I also mentioned about animals, and my mom, she's a director in an elementary school, and she's doing a club about dogs who help children that has problems with their emotion and stuff. So that's cool.
Oh, that is really, really nice. That is really nice. I love to hear because, you know, the truth is I believe that dogs give us more than we can give them, and they bring so much peace and happiness and tranquility and love, unconditional love, and I just think they're amazing. I'm so happy that you guys are totally into animals because we're definitely going to move mountains together on that front. But today is all about the rules of engagement on Twitter. You know, I have a friend that has no clue, and I'm not really secretly talking about myself right now. This is a real story. That I have a friend who, she doesn't even know how to say Twitter. She says Tweeter. How embarrassing,
oh
right?
God.
So I will tell you, I am not that bad, okay? I am way better than that. I know how to say Twitter, and I know how to get on Twitter. But beyond that, I don't know much else. So you guys are like the total experts. I want you to be my consultants here on the show today, and I want you to tell me, like, you need to tell me what the rules of engagement, because I know you already started telling me, and I said, no, save it for the show, because I want you to save it and tell me while we're on the show so we can talk about this. But, like, tell me all the do's and don'ts. What should I do? What should I not do? What have I already done that I shouldn't do? Get into it with me.
Okay, Jackie, so the first rule of Twitter, the basic, don't follow anybody you don't know.
All right, I already
did that. It's obvious. It's obvious. It's obvious you don't know them, so that you have a reason why not following them, okay?
But is it dangerous to follow people you don't know?
Well, yeah, because there are a lot of people out there, like, doing fake profiles and a lot of dangerous stuff out there. So only follow, like, the people you do know, your family, friends.
Okay, so 98% of the people I have now followed on Twitter, I have no clue who they are, and I will tell you that some of them seem really sketchy. So how do I unfollow them?
It's basic. You go to the profile, and there's a thing that says follow, you click there, and you click unfollow that.
Oh, that's right, the little check, you can uncheck it. See how like, completely clueless I am? But you guys are going to completely get me up to speed, and I want you to be, like, vice president in charge of the way I do Twitter, because I need help here, obviously. So do you think that when I stop following somebody, they're going to take total offense and come and get me?
Well, some people that are on Twitter, they're, like, passionate of having a lot of followers. So if you unfollow them, they will get angry and maybe send you an angry tweet. But
why don't we just say that everybody who I've already followed, let's leave them there, right?
Yeah,
let me ask you this. Okay, so Twitter is super important because we want to get followers for the show, and we want people to hear what we have to say, and we want to be communicating with each other and create a community. Like, do you agree that that's the way we should be using Twitter for this show?
Of course.
Why is it so important?
Well, it's important because your followers, I mean, the people that listen to you right now is going to, like, know what you're doing, everything that you have been through, like an interview, commercials, and going to the show.
Like, to tell people when the show is and stuff? Yeah, no, for sure. I get that. So the more Twitter followers I have, obviously the more fans of the show we will have and the more listeners we will have down the road. And do you think that some people, like, are on Twitter too much? Like, what's too much?
Too much is to put, like, everything you're doing. Like, today I'm eating a sandwich. Now I'm, like, I don't know, at school. And now I'm in English class. And now I'm in Spanish class. And now I'm eating. That's, like, too much.
It's totally annoying. I don't really need to know what people are doing, like, every second of the day. I don't think people give a damn to know me either, you know, like, to know what I'm doing every second.
Yeah,
how often do you guys post on Twitter?
Okay, I'm Jonna talking right now. So how often do I post? Like, every second. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. Like, when I get off of school, like, at night, I just post, like, a good night tweet or something like that. I don't get on too much.
All right. So, clearly, a lot of people, everybody is on Twitter. Young people, older people, you know, scary people, companies are on Twitter. Like, do you think it's out of control to be on Twitter? Do you think it's too much stuff and too many messages? Or is it really fun and engaging? Like, how do you see it?
Well, it depends, because some people on Twitter, there's, like, I don't know, this thing on Twitter that people, like, kill other people. Okay, let me explain that. Like, when this year started, they posted that Megan Fox died. Like, that's not true. And they do that, like, every time. Like, Justin Bieber died, Megan Fox died, and that's obviously not true, and they do that a lot. So it depends on how you use it.
There's a lot of false information on Twitter, and it's really hard to control any of that. I mean, nobody's trying to control it. Is there a way to report if somebody does something or says something really crazy? Is there a way to report, like, lunatics?
Well, you can block them. Yeah, you can report them and block them, so that's the way.
Gotcha. All right. So who's in the background? Who am I hearing in the background over there? Is that your mother? Does your mother know you're on the phone with me right now?
No. Where is my school? And that's a girl.
Oh, you're in school talking to me from school? I love it. So you wait. Are you going to get in trouble? Are there nuns over there?
No.
There's no nuns? Okay, then you should be fine.
No.
Okay, is there anything else you want to say about, like, engagement on Twitter, what the best way to do it is, why it's important, anything else that you want to say about Twitter?
Okay, another thing I want to say. Okay, Jackie Vidaloka, you have to learn something.
You
can't
what?
Favorite everything.
Oh, I can't favorite everything. Well, I'm so happy people are saying stuff about me. I'm favoriting it.
Okay, you can't be tweeted. Like, I mean, if you want to have that saved, log in and see that tweet every time, then you have to favorite it. But, I mean, girl, just retweet the post that you really love. No,
so I can retweet,
really,
but
like,
don't favorite everything is what you're saying. Don't favorite everything.
Yeah.
Okay. What else? What else am I doing wrong? You can tell me. I won't take offense. I promise you.
That's all for now.
Okay. All right. So here's the thing, you guys. Listen, I really think that our show has a lot of young listeners. And I think for some reason we appeal to, you know, young people who have big dreams and hopes and aspirations and all that. I would like to make this show one that really inspires people to do their thing and go for their dreams and not be afraid and be completely fearless, because I think that's what it takes to be successful, you know, is to put the fear behind you. Do you agree with that?
Of course.
Like, what is the thing that scares you the most, Janice, about graduation?
Oh, my God. Standing from the other people in May Hall, that would be so embarrassing.
Why?
Because, yeah, it's like walking. Oh, my God, I'm walking. Yeah, I'm graduating. Yay. But, boom, I fall, whatever. And it would be awkward that everybody's there laughing. I would be, oh, my God, seriously?
Okay, wait a second. You're terrified of the actual graduation day and getting in front of people and not falling on your face. So let me ask you this. What shoes were you planning on wearing to that graduation?
I mean, not high heels.
Not high heels? Okay. All right. That's
for
what I was
sure,
checking on, because
sure.
If it was me, I'd be wearing like 6-inch heels, and then I'd have something to worry about. Jana, like,
yeah,
we're talking about being fearless young Latinas. What are you most worried about in the future?
Oh, my God. Okay. Since I'm, like, studying all this that has to do with movies, I get, like, terrified in acting class every time I have to get up. But that's, like, something I have to, like, fight with.
But I will tell you,
yeah,
that many, many actors, like, very big, famous people, still get terrified getting in front of people. But you have to manage that, because all it can do is get in your way, you know. So I understand it. I totally understand it. But there are certain people that still struggle with that, even once they're famous and everything. You know, just try to put it behind you and get up there and be confident. I think when people see somebody that is confident, even if you're like freaking out underneath the surface, but if you come up and go with it and do your best, the audience will enjoy it with you. I think when people are afraid, it makes the audience really uncomfortable. All right. Well, is there any question that you want to ask me?
Okay, I want to go first. Like, when are we going to meet you in real life?
Well, you have to come to Los Angeles. If I come to Puerto Rico, I'm definitely going to make a plan to see you guys. But do you guys ever get to the States?
Well, I go in summers because my mom works in Washington, D.C., so I go there every summer, but I don't, like, get too much out there.
Okay, so when you come back to the States, you're going to have to let me know when you're coming here, and we'll have to make a plan. In the meantime, I'm so appreciative that you guys have been supporters of the show. You have been such loving friends and family here, and I think you guys are just amazing, and I want to continue the conversation. So this is just the first of many. You're going to be my loquitas. You're going to be our little mascot, and you're going to help me with the Twitter thing and the tweeter thing as well. I can't believe you said tweeter. Anyway, and we're going to have a great time together, okay, ladies?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for participating in the show. Keep in mind, it's Jana and Janice Garcia. Los Garcias.
Guess what, people? Our next show happens on Valentine's Day. And on Valentine's Day, we're going to talk about all the things we crazy people do to fall in love, stay in love, what we're going to do for Valentine's Day. All that stuff is going to be the content of our next show. But in preparation for Valentine's Day, I wanted to give you listeners just an idea of how the hell Valentine's Day got started, okay? So listen up for that. And then I'm going to tell you what I want for Valentine's Day, just in case any wonderful listeners out there want to spring for a little teensy-weensy Valentine's Day gift for little old me. And then the last thing I want to share with you are the top five crazy-ass things that Fairview High School in Boulder, Colorado is telling people to do on their Royal Banner website. Okay, so we'll get to that, but the first thing is the legend of St. Valentine's Day, or St. Valentine. The history of Valentine's Day and the story of this patron saint is entirely shrouded in mystery, because the Catholic Church recognizes at least three different saints named Valentine or Valentinus, all of whom were martyred. They were killed, people. That should give us a message, right? Fall in love, support romance, and get axed. Okay, one legend contends that St. Valentine was a priest who served during the 3rd century in Rome. And when Emperor Claudius II decided that single men made better soldiers than those with wives and family, can you understand why? Because the ones with wives and family are already being killed at home. But he outlawed marriage for young men. Valentine, the patron saint of St. Valentine's Day, realized the injustice of the decree, defied Claudius, and continued to perform marriages for young lovers in secret. When Valentine's actions were discovered, what do you think happened? Claudius put him at the stake. He had him put to death. Very nice guy. That may or may not be true, by the way, because there are other stories that suggest that Valentine may have been killed for attempting to help Christians escape harsh Roman prisons where they were often beaten and tortured. And then there's another legend that says an imprisoned Valentine, a guy named Valentine, actually sent the first Valentine greeting himself after he fell in love with a young girl, possibly the jailer's daughter, who visited him during his confinement. Before his death, it is alleged that he wrote her a letter and signed, "From Your Valentine," an expression that's still in use today amongst third graders everywhere. Okay, so the truth behind Valentine's Day and Valentine legends is murky, and the stories all emphasize his appeal as a sympathetic, heroic, and most importantly, romantic figure. So now that we know that love can be fatal, in case you didn't know that before, let's talk about presents. Okay, so here's what I want for Valentine's Day. The top 10 list here. The first thing on my list is Godiva rose syrup truffles. Truffles made with rose juice inside. I don't even know if these exist, but if they don't, we better start early asking Godiva to produce them. The second thing I want is a pink Vespa. I know this doesn't make any sense. I have a car, and I can't imagine myself riding a Vespa on the busy Los Angeles highways, or freeways, as they call them here. But I've always wanted a pink Vespa, and there's no better time to give me a pink Vespa than on Valentine's Day. So if anybody does know my husband out there, please send him an email and tell him I want a pink Vespa. I think it would be so cute. And in addition to pink Vespa, I want a red and pink hearted Spanx with feathers. Do you guys know what Spanx are? They kind of keep everything sucked in, and there's no better time to suck it all in to look good for Valentine's Day, but I think it should be themed. The fourth thing I want is a hot pink Coach makeup bag. I need a hot pink Coach makeup bag because I just got a brand new Coach purse for Christmas, and now I can't use it because I don't want it to get dirty. The next thing I want, and this is true, well, they're all true, but this is the most true, 12 new doggy and kitty adoptions for Valentine's Day. But I want those adoptions to all be for the right reasons, because I hate it when people buy puppies and kitty cats and little kittens for somebody else, and then that somebody else doesn't take care of them. And guess what? Where do they end up? On my Facebook page. And that's another thing. You know, you're going to hear in this show how I have this incredible passion for dogs and cats and animals in general. And honestly, people, I think you need to be responsible dog and cat owners, because unfortunately, so many of them end up at the shelter and they end up being killed. And that's just very unfair. So I think we definitely, for Valentine's Day, need to be responsible. But then if you are responsible, get the hell out there with some doggy and kitty adoptions. And speaking of doggies and kitties, another thing I want for Valentine's Day is a long walk with my doggy Maxwell. There's no better feeling in life than to take that beautiful little boy, which you can find on my Twitter page, and take him for a long walk. And he loves to take his little bony bone with him. So it's just the cutest thing. And one of these days I'm going to post a picture of him on a long walk with mommy. I'm his mommy, yes. Hey, while we're at it, why not take a long walk with my hubby? It's Valentine's Day, right? We can reacquaint ourselves. We live very close to the ocean, and we love going for long walks across along this walkway that's called the Strand. It is so beautiful. I'll tell you what, if you're sitting freezing your ass off right now in Michigan or some really cold place, you might want to just come out to sunny Los Angeles with me because it's beautiful here all year long. The eighth thing I want on my Valentine's shopping list is an expensive dinner with expensive flowers. Not cheap flowers, expensive flowers, people. There is a big difference. The supermarket is not a florist. And here's the other thing. I don't want teddy bears or any stuffed animal of any type. I don't know what to do with them. I don't know what to do with stuffed animals. And then what happens to them? They end up in a box to be sold at a garage sale. I know it's sad. And if any of you love stuffed animals out there, I'm sorry. I apologize. But for me, don't ever buy me one or any bobbleheads. I don't like bobbleheads either. I think they're freaky and evil. And the last thing on my list, and I don't want to seem like I'm in any way materialistic because I'm not, but I do want a collection, the whole collection of mini purse perfumes from Marc Jacobs. It's not really expensive. It's only like $38. And, oh God, those Marc Jacobs perfumes smell amazing. And I'm a girly girl. I love those things. Okay? All right. So that's my what I want for Valentine's Day list. Here's some crazy things, people. The Fairview High School in Boulder, Colorado is suggesting to the students. You're going to die. Okay. The first thing they're suggesting, I'm going to read directly from their website, is climb a mountain or the roof of a large building if you live outside of a mountain range area with your lover, your best friend, or, if you're really pathetic, a family member. Buy fireworks, hopefully legally. If not, they know a guy. In Valentine's-y colors like red and pink, and fire them while screaming at the top of your lungs, I love you! You can also add something cheesy like my heart explodes for you. And if you're out of luck and you live in Florida, this is my take, and there are no mountains, just go to South Beach and climb on top of one of those hotels on Ocean Drive and try not to get arrested. Okay, here's the second top five crazy thing to do on Valentine's Day, according to these high school students. At 4 o'clock in the morning, Valentine's Day morning, get your lover or best friend to come with you as you drive around town to all your friends' houses to put bowling balls on their doorsteps, paint, or write messages onto the balls, the bowling balls, that tell your friends how much you love them or how cheesy you are beforehand. Drive to your target's houses and stealthily roll the balls onto their porches, driveways, whatever. If you and your lover are particularly ballsy, send the balls to your teachers. Ah! However, this may result in almost being arrested, as seen in the movie Keith. Okay, here's my take on this, people. I'd be more worried about who the hell is going to carry all those balls around for me. I mean the bowling balls, because I got my own cojones. But who's going to carry all those balls? Damn! Anybody who's willing to carry around dozens of balls for you around Valentine's Day morning at 4 o'clock in the morning deserves to be your Valentine. After all that, you got to take one for the team. Sorry. All right. Third crazy thing to do on Valentine's Day is to go to the mall and take pictures of every stuffed bear, candy heart, mushy-gushy poem you see. Print all of these pictures out and make a giant collage of five or six of them and tape them to your friend's car. Completely cover it so they can't help but acknowledge the beautiful event happening as they use pliers to pry off all those pictures. You see, to me, this is the most logical idea because it doesn't cost practically nothing. You know, you take a bunch of pictures and you print them out. And the person gets the message about you that you're completely insane and they should stay the hell away from you, especially before Christmas comes. Okay, number four, crazy thing. Go on a blind date, literally, and have your friends set you and a mysterious other person up on a date in which you both are actually blindfolded. Have some friends there to feed you and keep you from breaking a lamp or your neck. Make sure you don't know who the other person is by not peeking and not saying your names. Also, make sure your friends are completely silent and don't interfere with your date. Videotaping the entire thing and showing it to everyone to see and laugh for themselves. Okay, this is absolutely 100% ridiculous. Because if I'm going to spend 3 hours getting ready for Valentine's Day, oh yes, they're going to see me. Oh, there's going to be no blindfold. Okay, top five crazy things to do here is number five. Make a giant heart out of Jell-O. This isn't for the half-assing type because they're talking ginormous. 200 boxes of Jell-O at least. Make a huge pile of red Jell-O and sculpt it into a colossal heart. Take lots of pictures, damn right. And then dig in. Invite all your besties and eat it. Take pink and white balloons and fill them with red Jell-O to throw at people or just squish it in your hands. And no, no Valentine's Day celebration is complete without a big, mushy, gushy, squishy, sticky, delicious-y Jell-O fight. Are they out of their freaking minds? I say if you like Jell-O this much, just do Jell-O shots made by somebody else at a bar, and make sure you have someone to take your Jell-O-y ass home after you've had all your Jell-O shots. And, you know, you may not remember Valentine's Day, but at least you did not have to cook. That's Valentine's Day as far as I'm concerned. Look. I think Valentine's Day is a really nice holiday, and I'm not one of these people that just refuses to celebrate. On the contrary, I want to celebrate. I want my husband to do nice things for me on Valentine's Day, and I want all those presents that I mentioned, and I want to show and share the love. But at the same time, you know, I'm not ready to go get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and take bowling balls to places and take balloons filled with Jell-O inside of them and, you know, go on a blind date where somebody... Well, I'd never be going on a blind date now, but my husband would know exactly who he's with. Because if I spend all that time getting ready, putting the lashes on and doing the nails and 3 hours in the tub and doing the hair and all that, it is not going to go unnoticed. So I wish you all a very, very happy, happy week. We got a great show in store for you. I will disclose my guests online. Please check us out on Twitter. Follow us on Facebook at Jackie's Vida Loca. Send me your comments and emails and your love notes for Valentine's Day at jackiesvidaloca@gmail.com. I check out all the messages sent to me. And listen up. Follow our little loquita, Denise and Jana Garcia. Follow my favorite evil twin loca at Nora Farr on Twitter. And let's make it a freaking fantastic Valentine's Day week. Thanks for joining us on Jackie's Vida Loca.
Adios, everybody. Join me again next Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, for the craziest Latino comedy on Jackie's Vida Loca.